The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Hey, Steve, when are you going to talk about Ron DeSantis sending people up to Martha's Vineyard? Hey, Steve, when are you going to talk about Governor Abbott sending people here and there and everywhere, New York City, Washington, D.C., whatever? Hey, Steve, when are you going to talk about Joe Biden? Hey, Steve, when are you going to talk more about Congress and what's happening up in D.C.? Easy, there'll be plenty of time for that, but do not be deceived. Tip O'Neill back during the Reagan administration was right. All politics is local. We tend to get, enchanted by Washington, D.C. and the halls of power up there and what we see on the news. And we tend to forget about local politics, statewide politics, local politics, county commissioners, for example, or your school board. And all the while we get enchanted by what's going up in D.C., the left, the progressives, have been working mightily down on the grassroots level for literally decades. They started to take over the school system back in the late 1800s. And here we are wondering, how did all this happen? Well, what happened is we all got enchanted by something that was not as primary to local life as it as we like to think it is. That's why we've been talking to a lot of school board candidates. We'll continue to talk about people on the state level here in North Carolina. And by the way, if you're listening in Utah or Virginia or Missouri or up in Virginia, wherever you happen to be listening, even though this is a North Carolina show for the most part, we're talking about issues that apply everywhere. So today, my good friend Fred Von Cannon is back in the House running for North Carolina House 35. And you're like, hey, I don't even live in North Carolina. That doesn't matter. You need to support the effort no matter where you are. If you're a believer and you care about this country, we're all on the same wall. Okay, you're on a different place on the wall, but we're on the same wall. So when you have these opportunities to support people wherever you find them, you should do that. But especially if you're here in North Carolina, especially if you live in the District 35 area, which is up northeast Raleigh, getting up into Wake Forest area, Rollsville, Knightdale, up that way. Fred, good to see you. Welcome back.
Yeah, good to see you too. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. I always like to kind of get in the Wayback Machine and reintroduce you because you have such an amazing story. God has been good to you, obviously, in a lot of different ways. But I think your story is something that every American of any stripe really should appreciate. Somebody that grew up with, we hear it, grew up rags to riches or grew up with nothing. In this case, that's actually pretty accurate. You have an upbringing that most of us can't relate to at all.
Yeah, nothing might have been an improvement on how we grew up. It was, yeah.
How do you look back on that now, all these years later?
You know, it's interesting. As you get older, you look back and think more kind of, in perspective. Uh-huh. 'Cause when you're in it, you're in it. It's, you know, I always tell people, however you grow up is your normal, and it's not abnormal until it is, and it isn't. It isn't normal, right. You know, until you could have some perspective to look back on it. So, you know, I do. I look back on it, and I think it has made me who I am. And so I wouldn't – at the time, I would have traded it.
Yeah, but, oh, sure.
But now I see the value in it. I see where God had me and why and how he grew our character, me and my brothers, and you know, just made us into who we are. And I don't know if we could have – got it any other way.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's just God's providence. But yeah, we grew up, you know, no birthday presents, no Christmas, you know, just literally nothing. The animals.
You didn't go school shopping every fall to buy new school clothes.
No, you know, the animals ate before we did. And so it was, I remember in eighth grade one time I saw a kid with new jeans and I knew his family was on welfare. And it was just like, I couldn't even my brain just locked up trying to process it. Because I was wearing the same pair of pants to school every day, same pair. And I asked him about it, and he said, yeah, we went back to school shopping, and I'd never heard that phrase. I'm in eighth grade. And And then he told me he got three pair, and my jaw like literally hit the floor. I'm like, who has three pair of jeans? Yeah. That's crazy. Wow. Rich kids, you know?
Isn't that amazing?
And so, yeah, it was just, you know, again, you start to peel back and realize, well, maybe ours isn't normal.
No.
Our upbringing.
That's
but
right.
It definitely helped frame us, I think, and help. Sometimes you just need different things to forge that character.
And I think having that experience that you've had, and most of us don't, and I think that translates well to why immigrants look at this country
the way that
they have, and the way that they have really for the last, arguably last 400 years. As you know, I teach U.S. history and civics and ethics, and we talk about this all the time. And most of us just kind of grew up this. We didn't know what we didn't know. But for you as an American, how does that aspect of your story, what you grew up in, how does that affect the way you see this country? And then, of course, we're going to talk about running for House and everything. But
well, you know, you're right about immigrants. Some of the most patriotic people are people who have come here legally and from countries where they understand poverty. They understand what it's like to live without the Bill of Rights and a constitution that starts with we the people, you know. And so they get it. And so, you know, it's all perspective. And just growing up, you know, we every night we with our kids that are now big. And so we do what we call thankfuls every night. And we just stop and we just before we go to bed, we talk about what we're thankful for that day. And it just hopefully grounds us some to realize how absolutely blessed we are just to live in the United States of America, much less to live in the best state, you know, in the United States.
And on and on and on it goes. As
yeah.
You look
and
them,
so,
them.
You know, it's just we are blessed beyond measure. And it sometimes it may take going through something. That's why I think mission trips and short-term mission trips, going to a country that you know has abject poverty.
Oh, yeah.
Until you know when people come back from that, I think even just going for 10 days can change a life. Right? When you see and you have some perspective, you realize how truly spoiled we are in this country. It really helps give you some perspective. And we got that without leaving the country.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say. I mean, I didn't have that, and I tell my students all the time. Get out of this country as soon as you can.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about a vacation. I'm talking about a third or a fourth world country because you think your compass is set on north, but it isn't. You have no perspective. And just go get out of here and go
That's
see
right.
some other parts of the world that actually do experience
And you'll
poverty.
Realize how blessed.
Oh, my goodness.
How much God has blessed this country.
Yeah, yeah. And that should be foundational to the way you look at the country. Yes, you got to deal with the good, the bad, and the ugly. But our standard of living, the opportunities that we have, notwithstanding that there's, of course, significant challenges depending on who, what family you came from, what kind of part of the country you live in, what are your socioeconomic things, all those things matter. But nevertheless, I didn't realize how good I had it until I spent some time in Kenya and Thailand. And then I come back and I'm like, wow, this is an amazing blessing.
Yeah, same. We went to very rural China over toward Afghanistan and you know, a person's house as big as this room with the pig sleeping there toward the end of the what they call a bed. And, you know, and they were the wealthy people.
Yeah, that's right. They were the wealthy people. And you realize quickly that this nation is worth fighting for, as is your neighbor. We're here with Fred Von Cannon. We'll be right back.
Oh, angel said from above, you know you make my world.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you here today with my friend Fred Von Cannon. VoteVonCannon.com is the website. Vote Von Cannon. That's VonCannon. VoteVonCannon.com, running for North Carolina House 35. We've got a lot to talk about as we kind of get into the issues and what's going on, but both at the state and local level and the national level, they all tend to kind of merge together. You have to have the right mindset and the right worldview and the right perspective, and then it overlaps into all those things. But I wanted to ask you, besides growing up in the challenging situation that you were, why did you decide to join the Navy? Why the military in general, but why the Navy?
Really ties into that, just to get out of that situation. And my best friend had joined, and I'm like,
where were you geographically?
Missouri, Southwest Missouri.
Okay.
Where are you on in Missouri? You said something about Missouri.
Yeah, I'm on in Missouri. I'd have to go look at it. The guy just reminded me the other day. I didn't even have it on the website.
So
he's like, Steve, I was listening to the show. I love what you're doing. I'm like, who are you? And he goes, oh, yeah, we've had you on out here for a while.
So, yeah, we grew up in North Carolina, then Southwest Virginia. Very, 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 not enough berries, rural. And then in Southwest Missouri. And so got out of high school, went to college for a year, which was just, you know, That was not good.
Not for you.
And or at least
or
at
maybe
that,
too much
at,
for you
at that
yeah,
time. Was, and so and so then it was like, okay, so what am I going to do? And it was just a way to get out of that situation. And, you know, very patriotic. I had voted for Ronald Reagan as an 18-year-old, and I could, you know, he had a vision for the military and a 600-ship Navy at the time coming out of Carter.
Yeah.
It was just the morale of being in the service. It was something, you know, good. And so that's, you know, it was an easy call. My dad had been in the military. My son was in the service. So it runs in our family a little bit.
Yeah.
And my uncle was in the Navy, so I thought, you know what? Let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's see the world.
Yeah, and I'm sure that had a huge impact. Were you an entrepreneur before then? Did you have that kind of mindset beforehand?
I've always had that. I honestly think it's chromosomal. I'm not even kidding. I think you either are or you aren't. Now, you can develop. You know, you are or you aren't. You do or you don't have talent to hit a fastball, but you can develop that talent, right? And so I think I was always entrepreneurial. I was always thinking about it. And that comes from my dad. One of the few good things I think that would come from my dad is that's kind of how he thought about things. And so I just always would think like that. And it's just a bent. It's just a way of thinking. And so never got to really do much with it until, you know, until later I got out of school and had a degree and could, you know, think about like, okay, what can I do?
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, I think people either are or aren't entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. We do a lot at work at my day job at Maverick. We have about 70 employees, and we go through entrepreneurship, and I tell them I go through. Like, if I lose people, I want to lose it to them doing something that they were born to do kind of a thing, right?
And so, it's a great mindset.
So we have a lot of training that we do and a lot of classes, if you will, that we lead, that I lead specifically on entrepreneurism. So,
well, a lot of people don't. I've been an entrepreneur since I was about 18, and I still am. You go, oh, you're in ministry. Yeah, but trust me, I'm still an entrepreneur. And most people just don't want that life.
I mean, that's true.
Because it can collapse, things can go south. Gosh, you don't really have anybody to call.
If you are risk averse,
you are not
entrepreneurial. Cool. That's what I'm saying. I think part of it is truly genetic because there's people that – I mean, that's how capitalism is so, you know, there's the risk takers that are going to win and lose sometimes. And then there are the people that don't want to take risks that are going to get paid to do a job. And that's fine. You need both.
It all
works
together.
You can't do it without
both.
That's right.
So how does a successful entrepreneur deal with running and not winning? So that was 2 years ago.
Thanks for bringing that up.
You're welcome. But listen.
Yeah. It's just like anything
else. This is how you learn.
It's exactly it. I think everybody learns more from doing something the first time, whatever it is. That learning curve from the first to the second time is like, you know? And so I'm competitive, and I think that's probably another characteristic of entrepreneurs is they really do like winning. And so which the corollary is you hate losing, and
yes.
I do. I mean, we were running in a five-point district last time, five-point Democrat district that with Trump on the ballot made it an 8-point district. Everybody that ran statewide, so you could look at in that district and see how they did, and everybody was losing by 8. So it played to an 8-point district. We lost by just under 5, like 4.8 or something. Same as Mark Robinson. So I thought, you know what? Okay, so we can run a good campaign. Yeah. I can't overcome that amount of gap.
Right.
And so then with redistricting, it became a toss-up district. And I thought, okay, well then this is winnable, and it's going to be tough. And this is going to be – it already is playing out this way. It's going to be the most expensive state house race in the state of North Carolina.
All of them.
Yeah, it's crazy how this is going already. Planned Parenthood has dropped $50 million into the state, and guess where a lot of it is going? You know, so that's –
Why? Well, what possible issue could Planned Parenthood have with Fred Von Cannon?
Well, the fact that I love babies, want them to be born, and love mamas and want to do what we can to take care of them.
Yeah, you're not just a convictional Christian that's pro-life. You guys are in.
Well, I think is a huge difference. You know, you can be pro-life on paper. Great. Mm-hmm. You can be pro-life verbally. Great. I think it has more gravitas when you actually live it out. And I think you know me enough to know that's where we are.
Yep.
My wife and I mean, that's how we spend our time and treasure is that we support every pregnancy resource center, every pro-life group that we know of here in the area and some more national. And so but how we support, it's key what that means. It doesn't mean we just give them money, which we do, but we actually are trying to help. So in other words, there's 80% of women that go through an abortion will say that they would not have if their circumstances were different.
Right.
Well, that's
change their circumstances.
Exactly. Well, and the first thing is that tells you they don't want to have an abortion. Well, that's great. So let's not default to that plan.
Amen.
So let's choose life first. Okay, great, because that's what they want. They're telling us they want life. Okay, and then they're standing in front of you saying, if my life circumstances were different, if I knew I could get groceries, if I knew I had
that's right
a job, or maybe I just need a dependable vehicle. Well, we've given away vehicles, and so moms have had babies because people on the ground, us and not just us, but plenty of people, you included, are doing what we can to change their circumstances. And the left has such an issue with that. They're investigating these pregnancy resource centers, and they
see that as manipulative.
It is. I'm trying to
manipulate these people out of their bad circumstances.
They're telling you what they want to be,
right,
as the end result. They want to have this baby, but they don't feel like they can in their current circumstance.
Yeah.
Well, then let me help you change your circumstance.
Right,
exactly. If that's manipulation, guilty.
Right, guilty.
Right?
So Planned Parenthood, and why Planned Parenthood would dump $50 million into the state of North Carolina comes down to why House races and Senate races are so important. Because right now, we're still a safe haven for abortion.
Unfortunately.
You go, wow, this is the Bible Belt. Now, the Bible Belt slid south a while ago. We've got somebody in the governor's office by the name of Cooper who will veto any pro-life legislation. And the only way you get around that, and this is why Planned Parenthood's dumping $50 million in here, the only way you get around that is you have to get people like Fred and a couple others elected to have a veto-proof majority, and then Cooper is irrelevant. You cut him out.
And it's interesting how they're coming at this. They're not coming at this as, let's, you know, talk about elective abortions, which is the 90% or more. They're coming after me and the others, you know, with this crazy stuff, like that we're against the surgery that takes care of an ectopic pregnancy, or that we want to outlaw miscarriages or birth control.
Right.
They're going after these crazy things because they're having a hard time defending what they're
That's exactly, you know, right. So. Well, they're gaslighting, and they're just putting it all on us because they don't want to talk about the fact that they make a whole lot of money killing babies. This is Steve Noble with Fred Von Cannon. We'll be right back.
There's a man going around taking names.
Good old Johnny Cash. This is Steve Noble with the Steve Noble Show. Welcome back. I'm here with my friend Fred Von Cannon. VoteVonCannon.com is the website. North Carolina House District 35. People go, okay, Fred, where's North Carolina House 35? What's the best answer?
North Central Wake County, Wake Forest, Rollsville.
Because you go right up to the top
line
of Wake County.
All the way up to the Franklin County line and even over to the Granville County line just a little bit. But it's North Central. If you think of the north part of Wake County, the central third of that, Wake Forest and Rollsville is the best way to describe
it. Yeah, Wake Forest and Rollsville up in that area. But again, it doesn't matter where you're at. Anytime you find out about a conservative, especially now, let me just put the cards on the table. Just because somebody has a fish on their business card doesn't mean they run a good business. Just because somebody loves the Lord or professes to love the Lord doesn't mean they're going to be a great representative in the North Carolina House, the North Carolina Senate, whatever. But if I can get somebody that's capable and experienced and committed, and they're a believer, so I've got the value of their flesh and your experience, plus I've got the power of the Holy Spirit. Now I'm with you. Mm-hmm. I'm down on that. Yeah. But just because somebody's a Christian doesn't earn my vote right off the bat. Because there's plenty of Christians that aren't effective.
100%.
Right?
100%.
It's just the deal.
Exactly right.
So whether you're in District 35 or not, even if you're outside of North Carolina, VoteVonCannon.com, because obviously you always need money. You just mentioned Planned Parenthood pouring $50 million in here. You're going to have the most expensive house district. I mean, we're North Carolina House, everybody, and spending tons of money on that.
Over a million.
Why? Because of killing babies, ultimately. That's ultimately why Planned Parenthood is doing it. Now that the deck has been shuffled, they cannot afford to have people like Fred Von Cannon serving in the North Carolina legislature, which is why they want to take him out and defeat him. And so if you have a heart for these issues at all, you need to support, obviously, financially, but you probably need volunteers, too. Let's just stop for a second because I want people to know how they can help.
Sure. It is going to be an expensive race. So if you go to VoteVonCannon.com, there's a tab to donate. That's always appreciated. There's certainly a tab to volunteer, which prayer, helping make calls, walking, knocking on doors. We do that every weekend. I'll be doing it again this weekend. We've done it for months. It's now not 100 degrees. That's a little nicer.
Which is nice, yeah.
So, yeah.
What are you finding when you're out there?
You know, the most, probably a 2-to-1, 3-to-1, people are still, top issue is economy. Mm-hmm. They even though gas prices have come down, they're still, and the, you know, the administration wants to tout that they've come down so much. Well, if you go up 2 and down 1, you're still up
right.
1, you know.
That's right.
And so, so the macroeconomic stuff is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. The question is really, how's your 401k, right?
That's right.
Ask that question.
That's
to
the
people.
Reagan question. Are you better off now than you were 2 years
yeah,
ago?
Yeah, but and particularly in that domain, right? Is your 401k, you know, had a friend just tell me the other day, theirs is down over 100,000 since he came into
it's
office.
Brutal.
And I'm sure there's people a lot more, some a lot less, but that's really the issue for a lot mm-hmm. of people. Immigration is a big issue. Abortion hits in there, for sure. But I'll tell you this, when I knock on a door, and cause I'm talking to swing voters, when I knock on a door and they ask me my position on abortion, I don't like try to look and read and see, okay, what answer do I give them? I give them my hard answer, which is like kind of like I said earlier, I am pro-life, but what that means is that I'm trying to help moms do what they really want to do, which is keep the baby. And so that's our version of pro-life. Mm-hmm. Legislatively, you know, I would be for a heartbeat bill that had the exceptions for rape and incest and life of the mother. And that's been my stated position this whole campaign. My opponent on the other end of the mm-hmm. spectrum, way other end, no restrictions,
none,
all the way up until birth.
Yeah, and just like New York.
In fact, if you take that, like New York, good you mentioned that, if you pair that with his vote 2.5 years ago on the infant born alive bill, then there's only one logical conclusion, and that is that he's for abortion for any reason or no reason,
oh.
up to birth, and even after.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
After the baby
oh,
has
yeah.
been
They're
born.
They're going to go down the road of infanticide.
It's
outside
it's
the womb.
It's unconscionable.
Because if I can't tell you what to do 30 minutes before you give birth, how can I tell you what to do 30 minutes after you give birth?
It's
people go, that's an extreme thing. I'll believe that when I see it. Really?
Well, that's
I'm just
position.
A woman stuck inside of a man's body. We're there. Okay, there's no restrictions on a reprobate mind. None. There's no restrictions. And if you don't want to believe that's the deal, you need to go reread Romans 1. But that's where we're at.
Yeah.
It's just a reality.
Well, so anyway, his position. So when I talk to people knocking on doors and I can
yeah.
tell abortion, they ask me about abortion, and I explain my position and I explain his. And most people are probably somewhere in the middle,
mm-hmm.
but they're certainly closer to mine than
sure.
his.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's several unaffiliated Democrat voters that, you know, I sit and talk for 5 or 10 minutes, 15 on their porch. And, you know, as I leave, like, hey, you just earned my vote.
Yeah.
You know, being here, knocking on my
right.
door. We've
knocked. Right.
I've personally knocked on over 1,000 doors already, and I'm
wow.
hopefully get another 1,000 or 2 before the election day. And it just means a lot when the candidate is there. I'll say that. But then, you know, just explaining the situation,
yeah.
explaining where I am and really why I am. I am pro-life because, you know, these are – God created these lives. And, again, I go back to the mom saying 80%
That's
of them
right.
saying that they would keep the baby mm-hmm. if their circumstances were different.
It's a big deal.
It means 80% of them don't want to abort. I'd say it's probably higher than that. And so all we're trying to do is help them with what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
so,
just because they walk into an abortion clinic, do not think for 1 second that they're actually excited about being there.
Oh, gosh,
That's
no.
why there's so much guilt and shame, and they're hiding their faces when they go in. They don't want to look at us if you're across the street praying for them. And that's just the reality of it. You mentioned the economy. It's still the number one issue for everybody. We all vote with our checkbooks, our pocketbooks, or a credit card or whatever. On a state level, North Carolina House dealing with that, what can be done at a state level to help economic conditions in North Carolina?
Well, if you look at since the Republican majority came into the General Assembly in January of 2011, was sworn in, so that last 11, 12 years.
After 100 years of Democrat control.
Uh-huh. And you watch going from and you know, from billions literally in debt to now billions in the rainy day fund, and at the same time lowering corporate and personal taxes. That is a model of how to do it,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, you know, looking at things federally and let's spend billions
right.
here and hundreds of billions and how about a few trillion and this and then are baffled when they have inflation. So, you know, what we can do is just keep a fiscal policy going in the state General Assembly, which is at every opportunity when we have billions. We need to figure out what a rainy day fund needs to have. If it's $2 billion and we've got $3 billion, okay, then maybe we need a tax rebate.
Yeah.
Because that billion sitting in there, is not as going to be as good as it is in entrepreneurial and taxpayers'
right.
hands.
Sitting on our hands.
Buying things
right.
and starting new businesses and everything. So I'm a fan of – the government makes no money, federal or state. They make no money. All they do is take the money. And so now you're giving to government what private sector should be doing
That's
in
right.
so many situations. So at every opportunity, I want a limited government. I want to privatize what we can. And so get everything out of the
I wish we did that with the whole immigration system. Mm. I'll give it to Visa and MasterCard. I can go spend $10,000 at a store, and I'm in and I'm out of there in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
$10,000. You could go do it right now.
Yeah.
They're so good at processing.
Yep.
And then I want to talk about immigration because it's in the goal. Nobody wants to talk about – nobody on the left wants to talk about the humanitarian crisis they've created.
Right.
You might not like Donald Trump. But he wasn't creating a humanitarian crisis on the southern border. He was helping to solve it.
That's right.
Because the Democrats come in with an open border policy. They don't use that phraseology, but go look at their actions. Forget their words. And they're baiting the trap.
Mm-hmm.
You get here, you'll get in. So they travail all the way up South America, Central America, through Mexico.
Human trafficking.
Because, right, human trafficking, rape, plunder, pillage.
So who cares more about those immigrants?
Exactly.
And that's the argument that you make, you know, and it goes over into other things. You talk about a woman in a man's body. Like the whole thing with, you know, what if it's transgender, if it's whatever, if I say that men shouldn't be in women's sports, then I'm now transphobic. Well, I'm not helping I'm not helping that person by saying yes. You
right.
can play in. I mean that's not a help. That's
Mm-mm.
you know.
No, you're sowing into the delusion.
And so
and
it's you know how do you? I think everybody would agree that we want to help, but what does help look like?
Right.
And sometimes just that knee-jerk emotional reaction isn't the best thing for any situation. And so,
as a non-border state, why is immigration important in North Carolina?
Well, a lot of the illegal immigrants end up in non-border states, and when you have 2 million already this fiscal year coming in, then they can't just stay in El Paso, and so some end up—
Or Martha's Vineyard.
Or Martha's Vineyard, yeah. They don't have room for any up there. But they end up, you know, in a lot of red states, and they end up in every state. So, and so they're just— You know, that just makes it tougher on those states to provide services.
Yeah,
for
the whole infrastructure of the state.
And so I'm not, and no conservative that I know is against immigration. But just like, you know, you have a security system on your house and you wanted mm-hmm. people to knock on the door and ask to come in. We let people in.
Right.
I told you earlier,
right.
I'm going to break. You know, we have our houses. Everybody knows if they need a place to stay, they've got a place to stay. And so I think that's the way our country is. I think that's the way we're wired
sure.
is to help people. But, like, knock on the door mm-hmm. and let's figure out who you are. You know,
don't just come in and make yourself at home.
No. Like, at least ask, right?
Yeah. Because if you did that, you're going to get the same problem at the Von Cannon house that you have at the southern border. You're going to have all kinds of people climbing over each other.
Yeah.
And because you have a massive human trafficking at that point, you're going to have a massive abuse. It's not rocket science. You don't need Common Core to figure this out. You just need to be conservative and be honest, and it helps you if you love the Lord, which is why we're talking to Fred Von Cannon. VoteVonCannon.com, North Carolina House 35. VoteVonCannon.com. We'll be right back. You want some?
No.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Hey, who wants to be a domestic terrorist? Anybody want to be a domestic terrorist with me? I want to be a domestic terrorist, at least according to Merrick Garland. Because if you care about the educational system, and if you are so crazy as to worry about kids and what's going on in their heads with all the indoctrination in the public school system, that you're going to show up to a school board and be upset and actually voice your concerns by through your anger and your frustration and your righteous indignation. All of a sudden, they literally think you're a domestic terrorist. That's why I would say if that's the definition of a domestic terrorist, I'll be one all day. Give me a T-shirt. Give me a bumper sticker. I'll put it on my profile on Facebook. I'm fine with that. But the state of education, we're here with Fred Von Cannon running for North Carolina House 35. VoteVonCannon.com. That's VonCannon. I put the links up on Facebook. But the state of education nationally and in North Carolina, this is a hot topic, Fred, and it's something I don't think we talk about enough.
No, I was glad to see you had several of the school board candidates
yeah.
here. I tell people, you know, obviously I'm competitive. I want to win. I think we can win. We've pulled ahead. We're in good shape. But I focus a lot of my attention on trying to help other candidates, and I've given to several of the school board candidates and doing everything I can to help. This election is truly, especially in a non-presidential, is a bottom-up election.
Yeah.
The school board races are on the back of the ballot, guys. Turn the ballot over, start from the back, and then work your way up and vote for Ted Budd or whoever for senator, right? I mean, do it that way to make sure you do it. Because your school board race, what more important race do you have? Do you want your kids to continue in your public schools to be sexualized, essentially what's happening?
Yeah.
Do you want to have – we're a book banner if we want these
pornographic
books out of the libraries for our, you know, elementary school
teachers.
Steve
Bergstrom was in here recently, also running for the Wake County School Board, and he had some excerpts on his website that I started to read them on the air, and I'm like, I got to be very careful here because I'll get spanked by the SEC.
You can't say them at the school board meeting with all the adults there, but these are books that are in the library. So if you want curriculum transparency, if you want age-appropriate books, if you want school choice.
And you don't want to turn everybody – we're resegregating the country. That's what CRT is doing. If you're black, it's hopeless. If you're white, you're a racist.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so evil and diabolical.
Our friend, I heard John Amanchukwu say this up actually at Loudoun County, I think, last week, and said that CRT doesn't cure racism. CRT is racism. And he's 100% right.
That's right.
And so these school board races are so important. We've got to get back away from all of that. And let's teach, since half our kids are graduating not being at a reading and math level that's considered proficient, which isn't a high bar, by the way, we need to have kids that are taught civics like you're doing and science and math and history and, you know, real things.
Yeah, teach them how to think so that they're equipped to go out into the world.
Yeah.
Not what to think.
Yeah, exactly.
An ideological
madness. I think one of the things that would cure this at the legislature level is these opportunity scholarships have been opened, wider and wider. I want to open that funnel as wide as we can.
School choice is probably a big deal with people you're talking to.
It's 100% because it fixes this.
That's right.
Competition fixes everything. I wish at my day job I didn't have any competition, right? And I could just charge what I wanted and what, you know, you're like the DMV, right?
Right.
You just, you know, take your time and whatever. Yes. It doesn't matter. You know, you're still getting paid. It's not that. And if schools weren't that, if a public school is not doing well and you opened up a charter school, private school, even better or whatever, across the street, and then you're going to – that public school is going to do one of two things. They're either going to get better – or they're going to close. And I think either of those Either of those are a good option because the kids are what's important. They need a real education. They need choice. And choice, you bring competition into schools. You bring competition into healthcare. The two biggest things that the government has screwed up, you bring literally the private sector and competition back into those, you'll get better quality, lower prices.
Well, competition creates what's the word I'm looking for? Accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Without any accountability, the whole thing goes south. That's why we look at D.C. and say it's the swamp. I'm pretty sure your opponent, Terrence Everett, is probably just fine with all that kind of ideology and garbage.
Well, that's
funny.
You mentioned that. So
he's not only fine. He's probably a promoter of it.
Well, he wants everybody in public schools only. That's it. No other option.
And of course.
It was interesting that he had to take his kids out of the private school that they went to 2 years ago when I ran against him because he knew this was going to be an issue.
Oh, man.
So he really wants everybody in public schools and public school. That's for your kids.
Him, right.
That's for your kids.
Yeah. Rules for thee, but not for me. So 2 years ago, he's going to pull his kid from private school because he's got to, you know, put on the charade. But 2 years ago, he also was okay with defunding the police.
Oh, my gosh.
But now he's posing with police. Is that what's going on?
Well, it's
are people dressed like
they're
police?
He's trying to memory hold this thing that he did 2 years ago where he was signed a pledge along with a lot of other very liberal Democrats to defund the police. And there's no walking that back. That's done.
Yeah, that's him.
You can't unring that bell. That is you. You were doing it for virtue signaling, but now you got to own it. And now he's sending out mail, that shows that, you know, they're trying to say he supports the local police, which is like, we're not going to forget that.
That's right.
And we're not going to let the voters forget that. So he does not, in fact, support the police. He signed a pledge to defund them. that is how you get to where we are getting in these bigger cities.
That's right.
And that's just a matter of time before it gets here. It's already been here with, you know, 2 summers
right.
ago.
Oh, yeah, we
and
saw
so
it.
You watch what happens when all that takes place. When you have no cash bail, you have prosecutors, liberal prosecutors that just let people go and don't even prosecute, you get chaos. And if government is good for anything, mm-hmm. it's public safety.
It's right? one of the few things that God commanded them to do was to punish unrighteousness.
Yeah.
And then he's going to – you want to defund the police. And that's the funny thing about all these progressive liberals out there is they say, we're for the little guy. We're for the little guy. Well, you go ask the little guy, especially in the urban setting, do you want less police or more police? They yeah. always say more police.
Exactly.
And so if you defund the police, you say you care about the little guy. You don't.
No.
All you care about is yourself and your power. That's all
right.
it is.
That's exactly right.
It's
and
so
it was,
disgusting.
It was all just virtue signaling to the mm-hmm. to the far left. And so – it's coming around. He's going to have to, you know.
What should we learn now? Now we're closing a chapter, according to President Joe Biden, who officially said the other day that the COVID pandemic is over.
Until his White House walked it back.
Right. And he probably said something like, the COVID pandemic is over. I don't know why he whispers. But what did you learn as somebody that's going to be serving in the State House? What did you learn by what North Carolina went through with the COVID thing?
Well, that
with respect to government,
yeah, that our governor has too much power. And the Council of State, which was constitutionally supposed to rein that in, he just ignored and just blew through it. So we got what we got, which is more dictator than governor. And you know, there needs to be accountability, and that's what you get when you have other people in making these decisions. And so. This was an example of, and the other thing too, I guess, is just when you start closing down all these businesses, you know, we were the 50th state out of 50 to get our unemployment benefits out. Mm-hmm. So he closes down all the businesses and then doesn't get any of the unemployment checks out. And then we were the 50th state to open our gyms, 50th state to open our parks. I mean, I think he was watching New York and Michigan and California and saying, hold my beer, you know. Like,
yeah, so sure.
It was crazy how this state of all states, you know, did not kind of fit in the middle. We were pretty extreme. And obviously he was doing that thinking, you know, he was doing it from polling and seeing that,
sure.
you know, enough people thought that he was, quote unquote, keeping them safe. But I think there's a lot to learn and some good, some bad. You know, I don't think that it was all bad. I think that we just need more accountability and more, you know, people involved in decision making
right.
than just one.
Yeah, and that goes to getting out and voting on November 8th or before. That it was very alarming that so many people were willing to just do what they were told.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like to think, because of the circles we run in, no, we're still Americans and we're not going to take very well to an oligarchy type operation here. And tyranny, but people, because of fear, a lot of that's gospel driven, which is a whole nother conversation, just kind of laid down and did what they were told. Now the state's got all this kind of information on us. They're playing all kinds of games. And the legislature's been involved with this, too, in enabling for the next time, because what they're drunk on power anyway.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you get COVID comes along.
Yep.
And just like the Great Reset people, that's another avenue by which to concentrate even more power and put the people down, yeah. and you're just
yeah.
our dogs.
You have to have accountability, and the way we went the last few years wasn't in place.
Yeah, that's right. How important is it for people to vote on November 8th?
They've got to. November 8th is 7 weeks from today, guys,
yeah.
and that's a big day. Early voting in North Carolina starts 30 days from today. October 20th. So you got 17 days of early voting, and then election day. Guys, this is the, you know, people always say it's the biggest election. Well, it's certainly the biggest election this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it takes maybe an hour to go out and vote. This will be a low turnout, you know, compared to a presidential vote.
Yeah, midterm elections.
If we get our base out, if we get the Republicans out, then we will have a red wave. We will have it if we work for it. If we get our base out, if we get our neighbors out, if we talk about how important this is, 3 House seats, 2 Senate seats, 1 Supreme Court seat in this state will feel a lot different.
That's right.
In a good way. And so that's our goal.
Well, because though we have the majority in the legislature, the majority is pointless.
Yeah.
Because of Governor Cooper.
We have 69 everything. Seats. If we had 72, we have the supermajority. They need 2 seats in the Senate. They have 28 to get to 30. And
yeah.
So that'll make a big difference.
Makes a big difference. 3 in the House, 2 in the Senate, 1 in the Supreme Court. One of those in the House would be, of course, Fred Von Cannon. VoteVonCannon.com is the website, North Carolina House 35. Vote VonCannon.com. And you said something earlier real quick about Cooper and his vetoes. What's the deal with that? How many times he's vetoed?
More bills than all his predecessors, every previous governor in North Carolina combined.
Combined. All the way back to the 1790s.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so nothing's getting done.
No, we have to politically castrate the man. That's exactly what has to happen. One of the ways we can do that, VoteVonCannon.com, VoteVonCannon.com, North Carolina House 35. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.